Cardinal George Pell, once the third ranking figure in the Vatican, is back in jail after Victoria's Court of Appeal upheld his conviction for child sexual abuse in the mid-1990s. He maintains his innocence and will consider a final appeal to the High Court of Australia. The appeal judges were divided in their decision. Two supported the conviction, another supported Pell. The story of the Cardinal's downfall began almost 4 years ago when Melbourne reporter Lucy Morris-Marr revealed that he was being investigated for alleged crimes. She's the author of a new book called Fallen, the inside story of the secret trial and conviction of Cardinal George Pell, and Lucy Morris-Marr is in Melbourne. Lucy, welcome.
Thank you.
Lucy, the exact wording of the appeal court decision is going to be critical in any decision that Cardinal Pell's team might make in the case of taking this to the High Court. What would they be specifically looking at?
They'll be seizing on anything that gives them a pathway to appeal. And I think their only perhaps chink of light, you could say, is that the verdict on ground one, which was the main ground of the appeal, that it was simply the jury were wrong. They made an error. It was unsafe. It was unreasonable. Now, it wasn't a unanimous verdict. It was a majority. Justice Ferguson and Maxwell said that it should be dismissed, but Weinberg is actually a very experienced, highly regarded criminal appeal judge, said no, he disagreed. So actually they were in conflict there, and I think Pell's team will really play on that conflict, really seize upon anything that Weinberg said in Pell's favour. And actually he said that he didn't feel that the surviving choir boy, the witness that everything on this case hung on, he did not feel that he was believable. Now that's a very strong thing to say. Is it enough to go to the High Court? It's yet to be seen. My legal sources are currently reading it and giving me feedback, and they're sort of saying that they don't know if there's enough at this stage, but they're still reading it, as Pell's team will be. The 300 pages, that's, you know, 80,000-90,000 words, no doubt. And so we'll have to see what they decide, but they will be seizing on any chance to say, can he take it forward? Will the High Court allow an appeal?
How did you first learn back in 2015 when you broke this story for the Herald Sun that George Pell was under investigation?
Well, obviously, I can't reveal confidential sources, but I spent 10 months on this matter speaking to a number of people in this genre. I went to Ballarat, I went across Victoria, I had many, many confidential sources. But actually, to be honest with you, when I first was working on the story, I did not expect to find out that he personally was being investigated for crimes against children. At that stage, if you remember, the Royal Commission in Ballarat in 2015 was mostly about what he may have ignored when he was a young priest in Ballarat. Did he cover up? That was my focus, actually, at that point. It was that, did he not help certain victims and things? And then when I actually found out through my sources that there'd been a one-year secret investigation with Sarno Task Force with 20 full-time detectives, I just remember being absolutely shocked. And when I walked into the office of the editor of the Herald Sun, he could hardly speak either. And they realised the weight of it and the gravity of this story, because it just wasn't even what I was chasing. So it was a shock to me, and I was in the middle of it. So, yeah, it was an extraordinary story to break.
Yes, I know that you can't reveal your confidential sources, but were they connected with the police?
I can't. I will always protect my confidential sources. I will go to jail to protect my confidential sources. That is the cornerstone of journalism. I think most journalists would be the same about that.
Yeah. When you did discover that George Pell was being personally investigated, were there actual specific allegations against him, or was the task force focused on general stories that they'd heard about Pell?
No, at the time when I wrote this story, it was allegations of groping children at the Ballarat swimming pool in the 1970s, and that he'd attacked choir boys at St. Patrick's Cathedral. So, yeah, we did get quite a lot of detail. And then, of course, in the committal hearing in March and April 2018, last year, we had a lot of detail of other charges. Of course, at the time, when the committal was on, when these trials were on, the public in Australia were kept in the dark. I mean, rightly so in some ways, because the suppression order was protecting a potential second trial.
Well, what can you tell us about the first trial that was conducted in secret?
Well, the first trial obviously was 5 weeks and resulted in a hung jury, which was an extraordinary thing to witness. These 12 jurors dragged off the streets in Victoria to sit in this trial, and then they couldn't reach a decision, and it was terribly emotional to watch them. Many of them were in tears when they couldn't reach a decision and they were dismissed. And then everyone involved in the case, the reporters, the legal teams, you could see they were absolutely exhausted and knew that then we would have to go through another trial. But of course, the hardest of all who had to go through this was the surviving choir boy. He didn't have to give evidence again. They would use his recorded evidence in the next trial, but it was extended. It was arduous. This has gone on for years now. I mean, it's been traumatic, to be honest, for everyone involved. And this is why perhaps now he's been lost his appeal. It's a time for healing in many ways for many people involved.
And how did George Pell's office react when you first confronted them with the allegations of the police investigation?
Yes, absolutely, furiously. In fact, Pell demanded an investigation into my investigation. He wrote to IBAC, who is an independent broad-based commission, a fraud commission in Melbourne, and wanted me to be investigated, or my story to be investigated. He called for a public inquiry, so he was ruthless. So it was a very testing, very difficult time for me at that point.
What do you know now of the Vatican's likely response to this decision by the appeal court to uphold the guilty verdict?
They've already said, yes, they're going to do their own Vatican internal investigation, but that tends to be led by what's happening in the legal system here. So I'm sure that it will say that he will wait to see if the Cardinal lodges an appeal at the High Court and if there's a result to that. So I think they'll all be holding back a little bit. But of course, if he doesn't get that appeal or if he loses that appeal, it's very likely due to the attitude Pope Francis has shown to other clerics who've committed these crimes that he will be defrocked, which of course for a senior cleric is absolutely devastating, in some ways more devastating than prison.
Yes, this won't simply mean that George Pell is no longer a cardinal. It would mean that he's no longer a priest.
Absolutely, he'll be completely cut off and not have a holy burial and everything. And for someone who's dedicated their entire life to the church, that is absolutely their worst fear.
Lucy Morris-Marsh, she's been covering the Pell case for The New Daily. Her new book, soon to be released, is Fallen, the inside story of the secret trial and conviction of Cardinal George Pell. Thanks for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
My pleasure.
And the Vatican has, in fact, made a short statement referring to George Pell's right to take his case to the High Court. Well, we know the long-term future, though, for Cardinal Pell is uncertain. He's going to return to jail to serve at least 3 more years of a 6-year sentence. And Pope Francis will ultimately decide if he remains a cardinal or even a priest, as you heard. Earlier this year, the Pope laicized or defrocked another cardinal, Theodore McCarrick, for sexual offences. Does the entire Catholic Church, including ordinary worshippers, now also bear the burden of this verdict? Church leaders have been speaking out recently on abortion and euthanasia and religious freedom, but will this court decision silence or mute their words? Gerard Windsor is an acclaimed writer, the author of 12 books. The latest is a raw and honest account of the challenges facing Catholicism. It's called The Tempest-Tossed Church, Being a Catholic Today. And Gerard, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks very much.
Even though the courts have been very explicit in saying this was a trial of George Pell, one man, how much do you think this trial, in a sense, put the entire Catholic Church in the dock?
Very substantially, it did, for both Catholics themselves and probably for other Christians and for those who are strongly and sometimes bitterly opposed to Catholicism, Christianity and religion. At the same time, victims who were greatly heartened by the decision of the appeal court were heartened because they felt that they now knew that fellow victims, like themselves, would be getting a fair hearing from the legal process and would be more ready to come forward with their complaints. To that extent, although it was a trial of one man, it had this wider ramification. As to the church itself, in an odd sort of way, I would say that the church has been rocked in the first place by the original verdict on George Pell. This will be, I think, a disappointment to a lot of Catholics, but I don't think it's going to alter very much the way they are feeling. On the other side, I suppose, and you've got to talk about other side, I think it's going to, in a sense, redouble the anger and the agitation against Catholicism, against religion generally, on the part of another sector of Australian society.
Yeah. You wrote in your recent book that the church in Australia had as its dominant face of Catholicism Cardinal George Pell. He was never going to restore confidence in the church. Given now two court verdicts, what does this do to the Australian public's confidence in the church?
In a sense, there are two groups, I suppose. There's Catholics themselves and there's the rest of society who may or may not have views about Catholicism. I don't think it's going to make a great deal of difference to Catholics. They've already copped on the chin the original Pell verdict. They're going to be disappointed, but that'll be it. A new leadership is there, although I disagree strongly with a lot of his views and manner in some ways. I think that Anthony Fisher in Sydney is a very, very intelligent man. He's got a very good legal mind. Catholicism is not just an institution of priests.
I want to take you, Gerard, to some interesting observations that you raised in your book, The Tempest-Tossed Church, which was very prophetic, in a sense, as to what's become. You said, when you were growing up, that the celibate priest, because he was sexless, or we thought he was sexless, this gave him enormous prestige. And then you said, the power of a sexually troubled man was lethal. How much did the Pell case embody that crisis?
Yes, it brought it to a head because he was who he was, the Cardinal Archbishop and heavy in the Vatican. In other ways, he was not typical of the sort of abusing priest and brother that we had got used to from all the previous charges against people. So to that extent, it wasn't as good a focus on this problem of the trouble, sexually troubled priest, perhaps as it might have been.
These wounds that the church has suffered are completely self-inflicted.
Yes, utterly. The focus on the church has been very much on the priests and the religious and just one or two occasions, nuns in Australia, more nuns overseas. But the people in the pews who essentially are the church, are most of the church, they have been as horrified as the rest of the community, and in fact, probably doubly so, because not only they're horrified at what's gone on, but they've had to live with the odium of belonging to this institution that has come under such fire, and rightly come under such fire, has been exposed as being extraordinarily hypocritical.
And to what extent, Gerard, has George Pell himself been a divisive figure that's fed some of that disillusion in the church?
He has been extraordinarily divisive within the church and perhaps between the church and the rest of the community. And part of the extra problem for Catholics is that, let's say, left liberal Catholics, they were outraged, embarrassed, annoyed by a lot of his political stances, as well as his theological stances, and his alignment with, obviously, the conservative forces in Australian society. That made it harder for Catholics to see him as their representative vis-a-vis or the rest of the world, the rest of Australian society, when in fact, in their eyes, he was not representative of what they felt at all. But simply because of his position and his power, he was seen that way, and the rest of the church was consigned to suffer simply because of him.
Where does this verdict leave two very pressing issues? The first I want to ask you about is the right of confession, because the Victorian government has proposed legislation that would require priests to break the seal of confession. This is a very interesting point because you raised this in your book when it came to the question of confession or the sacrament of penance. You wrote, if a sinner had been forgiven by God in the tribunal of the confession, what need was there for any further secular judgment and punishment? I thought that was a very interesting insight. How broadly is that shared within the church?
I don't think it's shared probably at all these days, but probably come to that over the last few years. Part of the problem was, as I think I do say in the book, is that these abuses, these now seen clearly as criminal offences, were simply regarded as sins, and that if they were only sins, well, of course, they could be cleaned up in confession. I also think that that's no longer the case, but the whole idea of forcing priests to reveal what was said under the seal of confession, it's not going to be in any way able to be enforced. It seems to show a complete lack of knowledge of the way the sacrament of penance, confession, works these days. Numerous people have come out, from Frank Brennan to Archbishop Commensoli recently, saying, nope, they're going to go to prison rather than do it. Mm. The state's not going to do that. They're going to send them to prison.
And just finally, Gerard, where does this leave the debate over religious freedom in this country? Because you wrote an essay recently saying that these two things, the trial of George Pell, still a convicted criminal, has been conflated with the debate over religious freedom.
And conflated with so many other issues that are going on at the moment, e.g. the Israel Folau discussion. I tend almost to think that the main divide in Australia at the moment is between religious people and not just non, but anti-religious people. It goes beyond even political divides. I mean, you've got a lot of Catholics on the left would vote strongly against the coalition, for example, but nevertheless, they are still firm Catholics and regard themselves and their church as being under attack. The ongoing discussions, as they will have to be, about the religious freedom debates and other things that are playing into it at the moment, such as various legislative changes to do with abortion, euthanasia, and the seal of confession matters, are just going to inflame this particular divide even further. It's regrettable. I really do wish that there were some people who could, on both sides, who could be more moderate, be willing to discuss it. We're just used to polemical pieces on these issues.
You've written about the need for a more humble church. In fact, that comes through very strongly in your writing. Does George Pell's conviction, though, do more than humble the church? Does it, in fact, render it effectively powerless in many of these big debates?
It certainly knocked its power. Anything that smacks of hypocrisy is unfortunate. I hope that people will be able to see through the failings of particular individuals, even of a lot of individuals, to wider issues and able to perhaps debate positions that the Catholic Church might put forward or have long held on their merits, and not simply as something that has been blown out of the water already by the actions of individual Catholics and religious people.
Thank you very much for your thoughts. Gerard Windsor, he's a leading Australian writer. His most recent book is The Tempest-Tossed Church. It's a very honest and raw account of the challenges facing the church. Gerard, thank you for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you, Andrew. Thank you.
And you are with Andrew West.